on the people. Dancing on the people like I.
Everybody in the booth can tell myself.
SMQBs, this is episode 197. Milk, let's start with you this week, because after this, I may not. We may not be speaking much this week. So why don't you start us off? Who are you bringing to a bar this week, buddy?
Well, I am bringing, this is more of a consoling bar experience. I'm going to buy this gentleman a drink and tell him that regardless of what Hal says, this season.
Oh, God.
His fault. He had a wonderful season.
Oh, my God.
More touchdowns than anyone in the NFL. I'm talking, of course, about Joe Burrow. And I just want them to know that I am his fan and he's got my support, and to not listen to House about not having a successful season just because he didn't make the playoffs.
Hey, tell him that you got him not only a drink, but a room as well.
Yeah. So, I'm blushing. Stop.
I mean, look, he can't play defense. It wasn't his fault. They didn't make it. No. Nope.
Tom Brady is getting angry with you, Milk.
I know.
It's getting up there with him. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Is it hot in here?
Maybe you need a condo, a two-bedroom condo.
Oh, I'm going to get him drunk, see what happens.
Wow. All righty. Pope, how about you? Who are you bringing? I keep getting very uncomfortable.
I know. First poor Joe Burrow gets robbed, and now Milk's going to roofie him.
That's a good point.
What a year.
After that, I can tell you, I don't want to roofie the guy I'm taking to the bar, but I'm taking Mike McCarthy to the bar because we have about a week. We'll probably know before then, but his contract's expired. He went out in a blaze of glory yesterday, losing another game to the Commanders. He was very defensive in his post-game conference, saying that he was a winner. He knew how to win, and it almost sounded like he was lighting himself on fire for Jerry getting rid of him. I don't know what Jerry's going to do, but McCarthy, believe it or not, McCarthy is actually a commodity that other teams are interested in potentially hiring. The Bears, actually, last hour, have indicated they want to interview him.
The Giants are keeping their whole organization together, so and John Gruden's name is circulating, so I don't have any clue what's happening. So
yeah, I mean, I would advise McCarthy that just for his sanity he should go ahead and move on. I'm sure he can find a better a better way to live his life than having to suck up to Jerry all the time. So I'll buy him a shot and wish him good luck, and hopefully take him to the train station and get him the hell out of Dallas.
Nice.
All right, there you have it. House, what about you?
I know that you've got a very good assistant coach down in Washington that gets a lot of press, but I'm not sure how much national press the Eagles offensive line coach, Jeff Stoutland, gets.
No.
The guy has put more offensive linemen into the Pro Bowl in the last 10 years than anybody in football, another three this year. I'm taking Jeff Stoutland to the bar because our playoff hopes rest on our offensive line. It's whether or not Saquon can break free against what will probably be some very good defenses. I mean, beginning with
Packers.
You know, the Packers defense is a good defense. And I don't know. I don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to play. Adam Schefter reports he's still in the concussion protocol. If he does play, I don't think he's going to be 100%. And if he's not 100%, he's going to need max protection. So Jeff Stoutland, all the drinks are on me. Please have a stout offensive line for this weekend's game against the Packers. Please.
Brewster, what about you?
Well, you guys probably recall that last year the Cleveland Cavaliers had a super talented roster, which the year before looked like was going to go deep in the playoffs, and they just were soft. They're a soft team, and then they got bounced early. This year they have the same exact roster, and they're, you know, 1-2 in the league in terms of best record. They're 31-4, and the only difference is new head coach Kenny Atkinson. So I'm going to take Kenny Atkinson to the bar and ask him to share with me the secret sauce. What did he do to turn that team around?
All right. Well, so I'm going to go off of away from football too, because we're going to talk enough about it. But I'm going to bring and I'll stick with some of the homerism that we have on this podcast. But I'm going to bring Ed Cooley, the Georgetown coach, because Cooley got a lot of grief last year in year one at Georgetown, where he was not very successful. And right now he's got the team 10-2 and 3-0 in the Big East for the first time since, I think, 2012, maybe, is the last time Georgetown was 3-0. Yeah.
So much winning in D.C.
It's very contagious, House. It's contagious.
Giving teams, coaches, a chance to win over time sometimes makes sense, according to John Mara.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. So anyway, I want to talk to Ed Cooley and see how it's going and see if he can keep it up. He's got some big tests this week. I think maybe Marquette and UConn are on the schedule this week. So we'll see how they really are. All right, guys, let's get into it. We're going to start on the NFL, House, with looking back before we look forward, right?
Actually, we're not going to look back at the NFL. We're going to look back at 2024 generally. The NFL dominated a lot of 2024.
That's what I'm looking back at. So, sorry.
Yes. Yeah, well, you had a lot happen in 2024 in Washington. But 2024, we didn't get our chance as a pod to look back at the year end. So happy new year to all of our listeners. Thank you for sticking with us throughout 2024. If you're new on board, welcome to us in 2025. We've got some special things ahead, but it's always fun when we go roundtable amongst us and look back at some of the things that really, really stood out as the most memorable moments, the most memorable games, maybe the most memorable player. I have a couple on my list, but I'll hold my powder dry. Pope, you want to get us kicked off with what really stood out to you in the sports world of 2024? What takes the cake?
Yeah. So I think, we were talking about player moment game.
Yeah.
I think to me, the moment, was Freddie Freeman. I mean, and I'm probably going to step on other toes here, but Freddie Freeman's game one walk-off grand slam in the World Series, shades of Kirk Gibson, most important part of that World Series was getting game one, and it put him on the trajectory to win. It was, I remember we're all texting and we're all in shock. It was a great moment to me. That was kind of the moment of the year. Freddie, you know, it had his own health issues, and so it was very similar to Gibson. Far as a player, I would say Caitlin Clark. The Caitlin Clark phenomenon is something that we have talked about extensively on the pod, and her ability to, you know, sell out NBA arenas as a rookie for the WNBA and lead her team to the playoffs, in addition to what all she did in college in revolutionizing women's basketball. I think to me, that's kind of the player of the year. And then the game of the year to me was Super Bowl. I mean, overtime, high drama, Chiefs go back to back, got to have a field goal just to send it to OT. Fourth and one, Mahomes comes through in overtime, you know, and they come back after the San Francisco field goal and they get a touchdown, a walk-off touchdown. So that's it for me. And I guess secondary to that was the Paris Olympics. I loved every minute of that. Enjoyed every 4 years I get sucked into the Olympics, and I don't think I'm going to, but this year I really enjoyed Paris, especially the U.S. team with Simone Biles getting three golds, and our track and field men's and women's team were fun to watch. So that's my 2024 thoughts.
Amazing. Awesome. Milk, run it back. 2024.
He just happened like all of mine, but I will say, first of all, this happened yesterday, so I guess it's technically 2025, but seeing Mike Evans tie Jerry Rice.
2025.
No, that's a 2024 thing. Come on.
Extension. Come on.
He did it all season. That was a really cool moment.
And it happened on the last play of the game when he needed 5 yards. And I'm sorry, I know that happened in 2025, but I'm putting it as 2024. I was going to say the same thing about the Olympics. Like, I've sort of lost interest almost in the last few years on the Olympics, but I felt like Paris, they did a really good job this year. And Scheffler winning the gold, that moment, especially during the national anthem when he started crying, that moment stood out for me. Just a really cool experience. You know, I thought the Super Bowl was great. Just a series that sort of culminated, obviously, last night. The NFC, the Lions and Vikings going back and forth was really neat. That first game they played actually this year was awesome. Last night wasn't as great. But I had Freddie Freeman as well. Thanks, Pope. You stole it from me. But that was an iconic moment.
It was obvious.
Yes. Yes. So those are mine.
Rooster, what you got?
I've got as my favorite game of 2024, the April 8th UConn repeat championship victory over Purdue, 75-60.
That's a good one.
Look out for the three-peat, baby. My favorite event, although I'm kind of lukewarm on it, is the Yankees finally returning to the World Series. But when you're a Yankee, losing the World Series is really not a high point.
You should just be happy you got there finally.
You finally got there, but it's really not the same.
Aww.
My person of the year for 2024 is the same as Sports Illustrated sports person of the year. Does anyone know who that is?
Is it Caitlin?
Ohtani?
Simone Biles.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Amazing job for the country at the Olympics, especially given what she had come back from with all of her mental health struggles for a while there before that. Very, really proud of her and am in awe of her achievements.
Yeah. There's nothing more stressful.
All right. It was a good one. Bison, did anything good happen in your sports world in 2024?
There are a few things. There are a few things. But I think one big story, and you guys took a couple of them, talked about them. But one big story was Lewis Hamilton leaving Mercedes. That announcement came out in February to go to Ferrari. Perhaps one of the most dominant teams in any sport over a period of time. And it's like the quarterback just decides, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else, right in the middle of it. Now, you know, granted, they'd slid off a little bit, but still the breakup of Lewis and Mercedes, I think, was a pretty big story this year. You know, look, I can't. Favorite player, I think what Ovechkin is doing on any level as a Caps fan or not is just really remarkable right now. I mean, he was on an unbelievable streak chasing the Gretzky goal record. He breaks his damn leg at age 39 and comes back and he scored in 5 out of 6 games. I mean, he's 23 goals away. I don't think anybody thought this season was a possibility at all for breaking the record. Everyone was looking at getting their tickets to early next season. And he's going to break that record this year. It's pretty remarkable what he's done. And then moment. I mean, there's, I got to say, it's Commanders, and it's not just one moment. I mean, the number of walk-off wins this team has had this year is really pretty bananas. They walked off the New York Giants in week 3. On a field goal at the last second to end that game. They walked off the Chicago Bears on a Hail Mary, 52-yard Hail Mary into the end zone. They walked off the New Orleans Saints when they broke up a 2-point conversion with no time on the clock. They beat the Eagles with 6 seconds left on the clock with a touchdown. They beat the Falcons in overtime. And then they beat the Cowboys yesterday with 3 seconds left on the clock. I mean, that's bananas, well, right?
I think especially with the rookie quarterback.
I don't even think I'm going to go to the game set Sunday. Why?
You
why
listen, yeah. You shouldn't. You're doing. Just go. Yuck just, Milk, just show up for the last
Yuck it up all you want, but that's, I mean, that's a season.
Go to the bar for the first three quarters.
That's a season, man. That's wild. So
those are good ones.
It's like the opposite of the opposite of the Bears.
Yeah.
My moment is a collective moment in 2024. 2024 for me was the year of the earth shattering retirements. You know, between Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, and even a guy like Jurgen Klopp on Liverpool. I mean, some of those are the biggest and most accomplished. I mean, just start with Saban and Belichick. I mean, the most accomplished football coaches in history, both walking away from it. Now, who knows whether or not they'll return, but those were pretty earth-shattering moments of 2024. I thought the game of the year, everyone expected the USA to just walk away and dominate as always in the gold medal game. Yep. And they were playing in Paris against the home team upstart, you know, French team with Wembanyama. And we had that classic dunk of Yabusele over LeBron, but then probably one of the most like ridiculous jaw dropping. Yeah. Put to sleep, Steph Curry raining threes just to end the game one after another, one dagger after another. It was like as good as TV, as good of the story as you can get. For me, that was the game of the year. And the player, this guy behind me, I'm not Mr. Like, you know, I joke a lot about whether golf has lost its luster, but what Scotty did in the Masters last year, the guy went to jail for God's sake. I mean, if that doesn't rattle your head and you miss the cut, let alone coming in and just running away to take the tournament after going to jail to start the tournament. You know, you just had a baby. His life is like all crazy. And he had a dominant year. I mean, one to remember. And I think I don't know where Scotty's going to end up in the record books if he can keep going with this. But I think 2024 was a pretty amazing year for that player. It was a great sports year. I mean, we threw a lot out there, but 2024 was a great one. I'm looking forward to us recapping a lot of amazing things in 2025, beginning with an Eagle Super Bowl. So on that, we should probably go to the NFL.
Wait, one consolation or runner up for best game of the year would be our fantasy football league.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Final play.
Yeah.
The drama of Doug picking out Bra with Zach Ertz catching a touchdown on the final play.
Absolutely.
Of the season.
Yeah.
No other fantasy leagues in this country were won that way. We are the only one.
Nobody was waiting on a Zach Ertz touchdown to win or lose the league.
We're the only one.
That's pretty funny.
Congrats, Doug.
Yeah, that is pretty unreal. All right, Rooster, let's jump into the NFL playoffs. You and Pope are innocent bystanders here, so maybe right. You guys can
before we get to the teams that are in, let's talk about how at least one team was left out. Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, has asked the league to investigate the Chiefs for basically lying down and allowing the Broncos to beat them because allegedly the Chiefs are afraid to play the Bengals.
That's not the first time that's happened.
I know it's not, but my point is this. If you juxtapose what the Chiefs did, which was basically if they could have conceded that game, they would have, with how the Lions played the Vikings, and my main man, Dan Campbell, head coach.
Oh, your main man now.
My question to you guys is this. Do you think it's better going into the playoffs to put out a stinker like the Chiefs did or to go balls to the wall like the Lions did?
Well, there's a difference, right?
Well, I understand the difference. There was something on the line for the Lions. Yeah. And not for the Chiefs, but I think that mentally it is not a good thing to go into the playoffs having performed like ass in your last game.
Another comparison would be the Rams. I mean, they they laid down, they didn't lay down, but they didn't start their the best players. They could have had the third, you know, the third seed versus the fourth seed.
So I think it's an interesting topic because I was thinking about bringing Sean McVay to the bar, and you know, maybe even a little Dan Quinn, because these guys pulled, you know, Stafford wasn't even dressed for the game.
No.
And Jaden Daniels came out at halftime. He wasn't playing real well, but he came out at halftime. I thought it was very interesting that these teams weren't playing for seed. They were playing to keep guys healthy. And you could make the same argument for Kansas City, although that game really wasn't very competitive at all. I don't know what kind of investigation they're going to do, but you know, it's really an interesting question. Do you want to go in humming and on all cylinders, or do you want to have people rested?
But KC, I mean, lost.
Christian,
go ahead, one seed. They would have maintained one with a loss. They did, right?
Yeah. They had
nothing to play for.
They clinched it the week before. 2 weeks.
It'd be stupid to play their starter.
Yes.
Mahomes got hurt.
I say to Zach Taylor, play better weeks 1-16.
Yeah.
I agree with that. His name will be mentioned later.
Yeah.
The only thing is the Kansas City second team looked like they weren't trying at all. The effort was poor.
And they got behind, and then they just kind of threw it in.
I mean, this is the NFL. Teams take every little advantage they can get anywhere during the season at all. And if you've played yourself into a position where it doesn't matter if you win or lose the last game of the season, and you're going to keep a bye and have the one seed, and you want to lay down and let another team, you know, get in over someone else,
I don't have a problem with the Rams with McVay at all, because he's got an older quarterback who's beaten up. He's got his best wide receiver has been out with knee injuries all year. And Caden, Kyren Williams, their running back. Dude needs a rest. He just does. They ran him like a mule this year. So I don't have a problem with that. But the Chiefs' effort was kind of laughable against Denver. It just was. It was an embarrassment to the league, I thought. Anyway, so going in, it looks, you know, the NFC is way more balanced in this playoffs than the AFC, in my opinion. Some of the seeds in the AFC were as a result of early season wins. And right now, there are two teams in the AFC with pretty decent seeds that anybody would love to play, that they're not playing like playoff teams. And I'm talking about the Texans and the Steelers.
Yep.
I mean, to me, the Los Angeles Chargers, who have gotten into the playoffs for the first time in many years, practically have a bye playing the Texans the way both teams are playing right now. The Texans are horrible. They're going down fast. And Pittsburgh's performance in the last five games offensively has just sucked. They're offensively inept. And you see it with the effort put out by Pickens. He's barely trying to catch the ball anymore. And Russell Wilson, man, that just has to go. He's just not the answer there. You got the Chargers. The Chargers should clearly smoke the Texans and go on to play Kansas City. And Baltimore should destroy the Steelers, although the Steelers always play them tough.
That's always a tough game.
Denver, on the other hand, as the seventh seed, is playing well at the end of the year. And if I were the Bills, I wouldn't be too thrilled about having Denver as my seventh seed opponent. Particularly since the Bills' defense sucks, their receivers are hurt and mediocre. Josh Allen can't be Superman every single game, and they're going to need him to be against any one of these teams. On the NFC side, House, good news for you, Watson, the Packers wide receiver, is out for the playoffs with a torn ACL, and their quarterback Jordan Love is hurt and has sucked lately. I just think they're they're in trouble. The Eagles should dominate them in that game. The two games to watch to me, the tight matchups are going to be Washington against Tampa and the Vikings against the Rams. I think those may be the two best first round games in the playoffs. What do you guys think?
I think that on the NFC side, I think there are going to be two division winners that lose this weekend. Now, I don't know which ones those are going to be. The Eagles, the Bucks, and the Rams.
Two of three teams.
So you're saying
the Rams and Bucks.
Yeah, the Eagles are not losing.
I don't know because Jalen may not play.
Because of the worst dirty hit in the history of the NFL, guys.
I didn't even say that, but he may not play. I mean, if you believe Schefter, and so far the reports of the Philly folks this week, he's still in the concussion protocol.
I heard he also, and that he also has an injured finger on his throwing hand.
No, for real.
No, I'm sure. I'm being serious. I'm asking. I heard that he didn't know that.
He has an injured finger on his non-throwing hand.
Non-throwing hand.
But look, I think in the NFC, the Rams-Vikings game is going to be a really, really good game because I was talking to one of my kids today. I think Darnold got exposed last night in the way he handles the blitz. And maybe that's not the measuring stick because the Lions are really, really good. But Darnold just did not. Darnold looked like the Darnold we knew, like the guy we knew from last year. And the Rams have a defense. And so if the Rams come at Darnold, I don't know. But I still think
the Rams defensive line is really good.
I think the Vikings have too many weapons.
Yeah.
But you know what's really interesting, guys? And I hate to say this while Bison has to listen to this podcast and give him any flowers at all. But there is a reason why the NFL put the Bucs Commanders on Sunday night at 8 o'clock and has to deal with a kid who's a rookie. They did not put what a lot of people thought was a marquee matchup was Eagles Packers, the Sunday night game. The Sunday night game, they're putting a first year coach with that team and a rookie quarterback and a first year ownership against the Bucs. I think that's fascinating. Just as a spectacle thing, I think that's a fascinating choice.
I think it's also a slap at the Packers. They're just dissolving before our eyes right now at the end of the year here.
I think Fox also may have said they want that game. I think they have the rights over NBC on that issue.
Well, look, Baker is a compelling story too. I mean, he is. Yeah, but Jaden Daniels is, you know, he was the third highest vote getter for the Pro Bowl, whatever that means anymore. But he was the third highest vote recipient. I mean, he's the hot rookie this year, just like Stroud was last year, right? I mean, that's the comparison. The NFL wants to highlight him, and you know, it's been 25 years, but I think it is accurate that Washington being a successful franchise is good for the NFL. Probably.
Here's my question about the Monday night game. The Lions lost two more starters on defense in that game. They have to be down like 12, 13 guys who have made appearances as starters on defense at this point. How in the hell did they close down that Vikings offense? I mean, who's their Aaron? What's the guy, their defensive coordinator on the Lions?
Aaron Glenn.
He must be doing a hell of a job for them to even pull that off with the ragtag defense they have right now. I would have said the Lions were in trouble in this playoffs because you can't win the Super Bowl with a bad defense. But last night made me scratch my head on that and wonder what are they doing?
Gibbs helped a lot.
Yeah.
But their defense closed down the Vikings.
They did.
I want to come back to Tampa Bay.
Darnold also hurt them, though.
Sort of helped Detroit. Yeah. But maybe Milk, that was...
I want to come back to Tampa Bay because I know you give a lot of crap to Bowles, but I think overall he's been a pretty good coach. And I'm curious what you see in the coaching matchup, Bowles versus Quinn.
Hold on. So Bowles is our defensive coordinator. Our defense is our biggest weakness. We get passed on. Like, we almost lost yesterday, in case if anybody watched that game, because our pass defense is terrible. And he's responsible for that. If not for Liam Cohen, our offensive coordinator, and Bucky Irving, who's going, who could be, I don't know what's going to happen, but he could be very good. He's very, Bowles is very fortunate to have those guys. He's bailed them out.
Now, do you blame Bowles or your GM for that poor defense?
Well, he's had a lot of injuries. Winfield was out yesterday. We also didn't have our starting corner. They've been hurt all year, but guys, we haven't had a healthy defense the entire season. So we'll see who comes back this week. But look, we've won five NFC South conferences in a row. I'm not complaining because I went about 20 years never winning anything. So
you sound content.
I'll take it.
You're content, and
I want Washington's ass.
Mill, okay? What is the Lattimore Evans beef all about? I've been hearing a lot about that, but I'm not familiar.
In the first game of the year, Brady's last year, second to last year, Lattimore had a late hit on Brady, and Evans didn't like that, and he knocked him on the ground and said, "It's Tom Brady. Don't mess with him." And now they've had beef ever since. But he's also Saints. You know, we have just
Somebody said there if Lattimore had been in the game yesterday, there's no way he would have just let Evans get those last 5 yards.
No. By the way, I think there's an unwritten rule in the NFL. Like I think those Saints players were like, let him have it.
Hey, you know, that's an interesting topic too, because you know, Pope, you commented on text about, you know, individual over team. But man, that team was so fired up for him. I think that's the kind of coaching decision that will actually bring a locker room together and gets the players behind the coaches. I mean, first of all, he had $3 million freaking dollars.
Well, I don't think the coach's call would have mattered. I think Baker was throwing him that ball regardless.
That's probably true too.
Yeah. And I think I don't remember them saying it's a $3 million throw. I remember them saying it's all about 11 straight seasons of 1,000 yards or that he broke over Jerry Rice.
He tied Rice.
Yeah, he tied Rice. But that was what they were focused on. It wasn't a monetary aspect of it. But
yeah,
you know,
well,
his
wife was focused on the $3 million.
Sure. Probably. Well, I mean, I could see his teammates. I mean, he's genuinely liked, I think. I think they were happy for him to get the $3 million bonus.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Milk, I think that the Bucks should call the Eagles and borrow those German Shepherd masks for the underdog masks, because it is remarkable. I know you're a favorite, but I think you are being treated as the underdog in this game. I think the Bucks are being treated like the underdogs.
Well,
Vegas.
They want Jaden in prime time. It's all about Washington. Hey,
I think Baker's a compelling story in the NFL too. I think people like watching Baker play.
I like watching Bucky play.
Bucky's outstanding. By the way, House, the last time Washington played in Tampa, I know what happened with you and Jalen. They tried to kill our quarterback and almost did. So I know what you're going through.
Yes.
Coach Sims almost died.
Oh.
Yes. So have an ambulance nearby.
You guys should
just field tennis teams.
I know. Well, I'm sorry. When did we move into the tennis segment of the pod? Mm-hmm. I missed that. I missed the transition.
I guess we're missing to Rooster's earlier point. Although I'm a little bummed that we won't see the high-powered Bengals, I think other than that, we really have a lineup for a great playoffs between all the teams that are in it.
Yeah,
we're like really, really great playoffs. Yeah, the Steelers are a little bit of a dud now. And unfortunately, Texans had some bad injuries. But I think we've got a great playoffs lined up.
So with that in mind then, and before we move on here, everybody give us one player that next week on the pod we'll be talking about? Who will be the one person you think that we'll be talking about from round one? Super wild card weekend, as they like to say.
Interesting.
Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. Right? How can you not pick him?
This guy right behind me, Herbert.
Nace, go ahead and say it.
I actually think it's going to be Josh Allen.
Okay.
And it may not be for a good reason.
Oh, whoa.
Oh.
Fumbleitis.
Both. It's crazy. I mean, look at those seven seeds. I still the Eagles, but Denver can totally win that game.
Denver could win that game. The Packers are just not going to do it.
I don't want to play Sean Payton in any playoff game.
I know, and boy, it hurts me to say this, but look out for Bo Nix.
Yes.
Wow.
No, not buying it. I'm out.
But definitely look out for the Broncos. He played Broncos some defense.
Salesman yesterday.
But there's something about Bo Nix and Sean Payton that seems to be telling right now.
Yes. I agree with Pope.
I'm telling you, yes.
It doesn't mean that Buffalo's going to lose, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than what people are expecting.
I could see the Vikings losing too. I don't. That's a weird game to me too.
Who can you see losing?
The Vikings.
Oh yeah, for sure. They're on the road too.
They play like they did Monday night. They'll lose.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anything else on NFL? We have to do coaching hot seats and Plaxicos.
Coaching hot seats sort of sorting itself out today. The Pats fired Gerard Mayo and the Jags fired House's old buddy Peterson.
Yeah.
However, the Dolphins, Colts, and Giants all decided to keep their coaches and GMs in place, which was surprising. Leaving a couple, three maybe, in my view, hot seats. Antonio Pierce has got to go. In Las Vegas. He's just not a very smart head coach. I like him a lot. Former Giant. Love the guy. He should be coaching linebackers somewhere. Mike McCarthy, who, you know, Pope brought that up earlier. He's on the hot seat. We don't know what's going to happen with him. And then we've talked about this year in and year out. I don't care how good the Bengals are at the end of the year. If they were consistently good, they'd be in the playoffs every year, and that's on their freaking coach, Zach Taylor. He never has that team ready in the beginning of the year, and they suck for like the first six games. That's on him. He's got to go.
Yeah.
Zach Taylor. By
the way,
interesting.
If the Eagles lose to Green Bay,
no.
Sirianni. Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
Oh, I think you have to fire Sirianni if you lose that game.
Yeah.
I think he will be gone.
Oh, I think so too.
Just being a smug bitch.
If you lose that game at home to a
weak, yes,
injured Packers team,
yeah,
with all that talent, it will be on Sirianni.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Besides Rex Ryan, who is dumb enough to want to coach the Jets?
Ron Rivera.
Well. That might be his only opportunity. I hear a high school turned him down recently.
Rex Ryan aggressively wants to be the coach.
Oh, he's lobbying for it every month.
I don't understand all these retread coaches, though. I mean, this is, you know, it's a young man's game, right? I mean, it's I don't get it. I really don't understand all these, like, guys who have been out of football, too. I mean, you know, on TV, and John Gruden and Rex Ryan and Rivera. I mean, these guys are getting interviews. What?
Yeah. 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 They ought to be focusing on guys like Ben Johnson.
Yeah. I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense. And Lewis Riddick for GM.
And Clingsbury.
I like him where he is. Leave him alone for now.
They're coming for him.
I think Kellen Moore is going to get one of these jobs. I think the Eagles are going to lose their offensive coordinator. I think he did a fine job. It's not going to crush me, but I do think Kellen Moore might get one of these jobs.
Shall we move on to Plaxico Locks?
Yeah,
let's do it. Last game of the year, and our man Milk, my partner, squeaked out the best record by 0.5 points.
Wow. Tie.
By the tie.
He took the Bengals minus 1.5, and they won by 2 points.
Wow. Oh.
So he winds up with a 12-6-1 record.
Would have made money.
I am 12-6. No, you how did that work out? No, he's 12-5-1, and I'm 12-6. So Milk edged me out with that frickin' Bengals and his tie earlier in the year. House, who started out strong, picked the Bills -3. They lost by 3 to the Pats. So
crazy.
He finishes 10-8, which is still a very respectable record.
Funny.
Pope also finishes with a very respectable record at 11-7. Having picked
money,
the Ravens -18 over the Browns, and the Ravens won by 25.
Such an easy pick.
Bison got himself a win last week to bring his record up to 8-10 by picking Washington -3.5 over the Cowboys. So we finished with Milk at 12-6-1. Rooster at 12-6, Hope at 11-7, House at 10-8, and Bison at 8-10. That is a pretty damn good record for the SMQBs this season.
So take that, Tad Thomas. Start investing in us.
Like, yeah.
Right.
That's pretty hard to do. So that's well done, guys. Well done.
That's 51-36-1.
That's really good.
A lot of money. Smoking. A lot of money you could have made.
People could have made a lot of money on us.
Yeah.
Yep.
Next year, let's roll.
All right, let's move on to a little college football.
Not doing the playoffs.
Supposed to pick?
I don't know.
No, it's too early. Let's wait till the next round. Wait till the divisional round.
All right, somebody's excited about college football. No, Milk.
Does anybody care about college football still?
Nah.
Lead us.
Oh, well, yeah, let's go. College football. The SEC is still alive, Milk.
That's right.
Barely, with a recent recruit.
With a Big 12 power.
With a fake SEC team.
Right, I tell you. Finally, we had a great game in the playoffs. One game out of, I don't know how many games we've had so far, but... that actually was on my list of games of the year. The playoff in overtime game in the Peach Bowl, Texas against a heavily underdogged Arizona State team, looked like they were going to roll. Got up quick, couple scores, touchdown on a kickoff, punt return, then Ewers two passes, touchdown. Look like they're going to have no problem. And then Arizona State just turned it around. And I'm the new guy, you know, everybody's loving now is Scataboo. What an amazing game he had. Basically single-handedly carried Arizona State to the brink of what would have been a massive upset.
An all-time upset.
A massive upset. Down to the point where 4th-and-13, Texas was facing it. Elimination. And it would have been a massive disaster for Sark, as the expectations are so high at Orange Blood U that most of my friends who were Texas fans didn't even go to the game because they were so confident they were going to win. They were saving their money for the Cotton Bowl and potentially the national championship game back in Atlanta. But credit to Ewers, 4th-and-13. I don't know why the fuck Arizona State didn't defend and get somebody between him and the goal line, but they completed a pass, went to second overtime, got quick score in the second overtime, and then intercepted Arizona State. So Texas survive in advance. That's what it's about in college basketball. And with this new format, that's what it's about in college football. And they're going to go up against Ohio State, who just destroyed Oregon in what we thought was going to be the game of the year. Potentially the, you know, best game in the entire playoffs was the Oregon, Ohio State rematch, and Ohio State just did everything right. And Oregon could do nothing wrong. Ohio State dominated. in a way that we hadn't seen two back-to-back dominating games like Ohio State done against Tennessee and Oregon.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure I agree we haven't seen that. Well, I think Notre Dame has looked pretty good in their two games.
They have.
Talking about Ohio State dominating.
But the larger point is what I'm going to get to is that the college football playoff and historically has been you play two dominating games and you win the national championship. But we haven't seen a scenario where now, you know, can Ohio State, can Notre Dame, you know, can they, Penn State, can they continue to play two, three, four dominating games in a row? I mean, is Ohio State due for a letdown? It's hard to play that many really tough, good opponent dominating games in a row. And that's why I think Texas has a good chance. They did not play a great game against Arizona State. But that they have a good chance to win against Ohio State. First of all, it's going to be like a home game for them. Cotton Bowl, weather notwithstanding, it's going to be like 80-20 for Texas because everybody wants to go, you know, the Cotton Bowl to see Texas play. You know,
this game right here shows, at least to me, the pros and cons of this whole playoff system is that we've never seen, like in the NFL, these hot teams, right? Like lower seeds, you know, of course I'm thinking about my Bucks, you know, a fifth seed going on a run and winning the Super Bowl. Like we've never had that. And here you have Ohio State who's surprising everybody and is going on this massive run and could potentially go into the championship. And they never would have had a chance until this year.
Right. Yeah. They would have been out.
They wouldn't even made it. But damn it, if Oregon didn't get screwed, because they shouldn't have been playing Ohio State and the seeding screwed up. And that pisses me off that they are not an eight seed and Oregon should have been playing a Boise State or somebody like that in the second round.
Arizona State. Defeated,
and they've got to get that right. They got to change that next year and make it the best teams, not this bullshit.
Talk about your blue bloods though, right? I mean, this is a blue blood Final Four for college football.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yes, it is. It's not a modern
blue it blood. Is Pope. This is as blue blood as
country
it gets. Nobody
wants
cares about
a
Alabama.
Non-SEC championship.
Nobody cares about Alabama.
Look, Penn State hasn't been here since Joe Pa. I mean, they have not been on the big stage like this. Ohio State, yes, but they haven't been since Zeke Elliott and they beat Oregon in the college football playoff in Dallas. What I'm saying is you have these Big Ten teams that have been milk. Historically, they get blown out by the SEC teams in the semifinals or the final of the college football playoff. So, yeah, they're blue blood, but they're old blue blood. They're old. And Texas, same way.
Isn't that what blue blood is?
Yeah.
Historically long, dominant, you know.
Yeah, but you have to have some record of. You have to have some record of recent domination to be a blue blood. You can't just go away and then.
I think when you have a 100,000 seat stadium and $100 million coming into your program, you're kind of a blue blood. But I will say this, that what I said before the college football playoff started, particularly as it related to Notre Dame and Penn State, these are teams that perennially either just flopped at the end or if they got into what was the BCS, they were just overmatched. They needed the system that was set up here to get the engine revved. And now, like, look out. I mean, I think that's going to be a really, really great game. I think Notre Dame's going to take it. But Penn State's got a very good defense. And if their running backs are going and Drew Allar is on, they can absolutely take them down. I do think that the winner of Notre Dame, I know Bison likes Notre Dame a lot this playoff run, but I do think the winner of that is going to be the bridesmaid here to the CFP. I think your Ohio State Texas winner is going to win it all, but I still think that's going to be the Notre Dame. Both these games are going to be great. I think you made a great point about keeping it going. But what Will Howard is doing right now, he's just like, he's in a groove. He's like on another level right now. And the question is Quinn Ewers, Is he healthy and is his head on? He did not look great.
He's not healthy. He's a lower leg or ankle or something injury.
Well, he's not as mobile, right?
He's not planting, but he's also not planting very well and driving on his passes. He's throwing some passes that come up short. You can see the difference.
So I got a couple like key questions though. Are we going to see Abdul Carter? Is he going to play? We don't know.
I think so. Did you see his little thing with Darth Vader?
Yeah, he was. That was great. Yeah.
That was great. I think he's going to play.
And could Arch Manning be the X factor on Friday night?
Ooh, wow, would that be crazy?
I don't think so.
I don't know. If Quinn's not effective in moving the ball against Ohio State, Sark isn't going to hesitate to pull him.
He seems like
Tua Jalen Redux.
Yeah.
He's on a short leash for sure.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and to Rooster's point, I mean, if Ewers can't move and can't plant, then, you know, they're not going to get behind by 14 and expect to be able to come back against Ohio State. Sark's going to have to do something.
I think Ewers is hurt, and it's really killed his draft position to the point where he probably should transfer to another team and play another year, make a bunch of money in college one more year, and then
being offered $6 million allegedly.
Year. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
If he has a healthy year and lights it up next year, he's a high pick, just like he was talked about being earlier this year, until he hurt himself and started to play inconsistently.
All right. Anything else on college football?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Who's got a punch? Don't call it a comeback.
I have like a left, right slap.
Milk slap.
We didn't really cover it, but the two successive firings, the way the Sacramento Kings fired Mike Brown and the way the New England Patriots handled Gerard Mayo, I think are just really crappy. It's a really, really crappy side of sports. Mike Brown had just finished a game and had already given a press conference and everything. And they basically told him before getting on a plane that he wasn't going to be continuing as a coach of the Sacramento Kings. It was a really, really horrible way to handle. They don't have the same. They haven't met the expectations as last year, but that was horrendous. And what they did with Gerard Mayo was just a joke. I mean, maybe they've got somebody lined up waiting in the wings and maybe that's what it's about. But I don't know if you saw Gronk before he got cut off. But
Yeah.
I mean, that was just, they gave him a rookie quarterback and a very young team. He's a first year coach and that's all you're going to give him? A 1 year leash? That was just.
The fact
was beside himself.
The New England fans were really down on Mayo for stupid play calling, and it happened to Dan Campbell his first year too. If we think back about some of his fourth down calls and time failure to call timeouts, etc., Mayo had a lot of dumb calls this year, and the New England fans are tough. And
when you have a rookie coach, you got to expect that he's going to screw some stuff up, right? You didn't. If you hired a rookie coach to take you to the Super Bowl in year one. Well, that's stupid.
Look at Dan Campbell.
You hired him
3-13.
I think they would have kept him, but Vrabel's available and they want Mike Vrabel.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, House. I think it should be a full-fledged punch.
I agree.
Any other punches? Anybody got a lasso?
Barbecue sauce. Ah!
I've got one. So the president just announced the Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients recently, and two of the most magnificent players in all of sports and people in all of sports were recipients. One, Lionel Messi, who is probably the most decorated soccer player ever, but also has his own federation where he supports programs for kids all over the world, educational, health, you name it, sports. He does it, and he's a UNICEF ambassador. I mean, the guy really is a good human being. And the other one is Magic Johnson, who just lit up the NBA when it really needed
a boost with his infectious smile and brilliant personality, and then went on to become, you know, a hugely successful entrepreneur and gave back to the underserved communities, both by helping them understand how to promote business in the inner cities and through his philanthropic work. So both really just nice people who deserve the recognition. I'm glad they got the award.
The ones.
Good ones. Yep. Anybody else for the lasso? Buzzer beaters. Who's got one?
Watch where Jimmy Butler lands. Ooh. Wild story coming out of Miami. He also threw up his deuces. He's another guy done in Miami. I think it's going to be either Memphis, Phoenix, or Golden State. And any one of those, Jimmy could really change the fortunes of those teams.
Definitely. Definitely.
Good one.
Also, keep your eye on OKC, man. They're at 15 straight wins. Yep. And their last two games, I watched the Knicks game. The Knicks were handling OKC through 3.5 quarters and then ran out of gas because the Knicks just don't have a very deep bench right now. OKC's just stuck with it, persevered. They were down like 14 at the half, came back and won that game. Then they went and played the Celtics, and the same damn thing happened. The Celtics were handling them no problem, and OKC just stayed in the game and won it late in the fourth. And they're doing this without Chet Holmgren, who's still hurt. So this is a team to keep your eye on. They're exciting.
I got one. Good luck to our friends in Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, yeah, tonight. Here.
Bison of North Dakota State take on Montana State for the FCS National Championship.
That tonight?
Yeah.
Tonight in Frisco, Texas. In North
Dakota State. Texas is like 20 minutes north of here.
There you go, Pope. North Dakota State going for their 10th FCS National Championship. Should be a big one. Go Bison.
All right, gents. Happy New Year again. Go Birds.
All right, good luck.
Enjoy the playoffs,
everybody. See y'all. See you next week.
See ya.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.